Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for December of 2022. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully be interest to everyone. Dates to remember in December begin with Remember Pearl Harbor Day on the 7th. Not too many of us around who lived at that moment in our history. The U.S. National Guard birthday is the 13th. Hanukkah begins on the 18th and ends on the 26th. The 21st is the first day of winter, and Christmas Day this year falls on Sunday the 25th. Kwanzaa begins on the 26th, and then on the 31st, we look forward to 2023 on New Year's Eve. We can throw our 2022 calendars into our recycle bins. This headline caught my eye, and perhaps you are thinking about the same thing. The pandemic may have altered your personality, the article begins. From rethinking workspaces to how we socialize with one another, there hasn't been a part of our lives unaffected by the pandemic. A new study shows the effects of the pandemic could even have altered your personality. The most widely used model to determine personality is the five-factor model, which determines one's tendency toward extroversion, openness, neuroticism, contentiousness, and agreeableness. Published in the journal PLOS-1, the study found that there were small but significant declines in openness, extroversion, agreeableness when compared to personality traits measured before the pandemic. The researchers studied 7,109 participants across different ages and races and analyzed their personalities before and during the pandemic. Among all of the subgroups, younger adults reported the most change to their personality. The study notes that people of that age, our personalities decline in neuroticism and increase in agreeableness and conscientiousness. However, compared to pre-pandemic personality results, the opposite occurred in younger adults. This is because of all the normal things that young adults are supposed to do were disrupted: school, socializing, and work. Study author Angelina Sutton told NPR. Additionally, compared to young adults, older adults in a much more stable place in general, she said. Although small, the changes in personality can result in greater effects on young adults. The study noted that personalities were associated with certain outcomes. For example, people with higher levels of consciousness might achieve more education, or those with higher levels of neuroticism might engage in high-risk behaviors. The study notes there's a potential for these changes to ripple into adulthood, but further research needs to be conducted before reaching a conclusion. While it's widely believed personality remains stable throughout one's life, research points to the contrary. There's quite a lot of evidence in the last couple of decades that personality is something that's dynamic and changeable, and there are a lot of different factors that influence that change. Associate Professor of Behavioral and Brain Science at the University of Georgia, Brian Haas, Ph.D., told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution newspaper. Dr. Haas is not affiliated with the study. People express their personality differently according to different contexts and situations. There's a growing consensus in the field of personality research that this notion of personality being really enduring and concrete is not really the case. The study found that Latino and Hispanic individuals had the greatest change in personality compared to other races. This study speculates this difference might be because Hispanic Latino participants experienced greater stress from working on the front lines and faced an increasing risk to COVID-19. Cultural contexts play a role in personality as well, since different cultures exhibit different traits in different ways. Previously, Dr. Haas studied how worldview affects well-being in individuals from the United States and Japan. There's quite a bit of variation in the expression of personality traits according to cultural context. People think about how solid or changeable their personality is different according to culture, Dr. Haas says. In the United States, it's highly valued to stick to your guns, in a sense, and be the same person according to different stages of life and different social contexts. But in other places, for example, in Japan or other Eastern Asian cultures, it's more acceptable to express yourself differently and to be a different person according to different times of life or different social situations. Changes in personality can also affect health outcomes. Previous studies have indicated increases in contentiousness and extroversion predict better health, whereas higher levels of agreeableness and neuroticism had poor health outcomes. In the United States, people change their personality tend to exhibit lower amounts of well-being and life satisfaction when compared with those that don't change their personality, Dr. Haas said. So personality change in general corresponds to a decrease in well-being. I thought this article might be hopeful, but maybe the theme was overcome by big, long medical terms. We're all experiencing higher prices when we go grocery shopping, and here's some information that might be helpful next time you go shopping. Saving money at the grocery store might seem intimidating. After all, everything about the experience, from the upbeat music played in the aisles to those pre-cut packages of vegetables designed to part you from your hard-earned cash. But you don't have to be an Olympic-level couponer or buy food by the pallet to trim some bucks from that total. Whether you're already a cost-conscious shopper or you're thinking about spending in new ways these days, a few small changes can go a long way if you make them long-term habits. If you take out some convenience products and you save $10 in one shop, that doesn't seem like much, says Aaron Chase, who runs the blog $5 Dinners. But if you shop once a week and you keep it up and you're looking at real savings, she suggests you try out a few money-saving tactics and see what sticks in the long run. And here are some ideas to help you get started. Number one is to plan ahead. Saving money at the grocery store usually comes down to a trade-off in convenience. That can take a lot of forms, whether it means buying pre-made salad dressing instead of making your own, or shopping down the street instead of a cheaper store across town. Think hard about what you're willing to give up and what you're not. A lot of your saving comes down to what you do before you set foot in the store. Make sure you shop your own cupboard or pantry first and have a meal plan that you're shopping for. There are loads of resources online and recipe books for budget-friendly meals. Apps can help you identify what's on sale or when you're planning your meals. And don't go alone. If you're shopping for a household, enlist your partner and your kids in the project, too. Talk to your kids over dinner, Ms. Chase suggested, and keep it simple. Say, guys, we're spending too much on food. We're going to do some things a little different. Next step is to stay flexible. Expand where you shop. Consider discount or international stores. Be open-minded. International stores have amazing prices on things that would be considered specialty items at other places. Maybe it's time to test your brand loyalty. If you regularly grab a particular brand, consider a less expensive one or a store brand. You might eventually decide to go back to your name brand favorite, but it's worth revisiting. And while your motto should be plan, 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 be prepared to pivot. If you encounter an unexpectedly high price for a product or an ingredient on your list, maybe it wasn't on sale at all, or they had run out of that item. You may want to make a swap, chicken thighs instead of breasts, maybe a different cut of steak. This is maybe easiest when you're shopping for items like pizza, stir fries, and casseroles that can adapt. Focus on the pricey stuff. Meat is probably the most expensive item going into the grocery cart, and it's smart to focus there. Check the sales. and you can buy less if you find ways to cut it with other less expensive proteins. It's been suggested that we use lentils in sloppy joes. And tacos, black beans and taco meals. The produce item can be tricky too. Be sure you check to see if the price is per item or per pound. And consider whether you really need a fresh vegetable or fruit. Frozen produce can often be a money saver, and there's less chance it'll go to the waste. Avoid impulse buys. Shop alone if possible. The temptation to placate a kid with a treat or indulge a request for an off-the-list meal can quickly derail your plan. But if that's not possible, try asking kids ahead of time what one item they want to eat this week and then enlist their help in finding it and putting it in the grocery cart. Shopping while hungry is always a bad idea for both grown-ups and children alike. Many people like curbside pickup because it eliminates the in-moment temptations. Just watch out for the pricey substitutions. And even if you're by yourself and feeling no hunger pangs, steel yourself against your weaknesses, whether it's a magazine at the checkout or a bunch of flowers. In stores like Costco, you pass up displays of everything from pajamas to laptops. You could wind up with an entire wardrobe. Trace your success. After you've taken steps to hold down your spending, there's nothing more encouraging than actually seeing your efforts pay off. Take a look at your grocery spending before and after you started making changes. You don't even need a fancy spreadsheet or an app. Just write it down. And even if you're saving just a few dollars, give yourself a mental high five. And when you see it working, it will encourage you to keep going. And since grocery shopping is a never-ending errand, there's always another chance to do better. Think about baby steps. You're building habits over time. These suggestions might be difficult, but some of them may make you want to try them. Grocery stores are reducing the use of labels such as Best Buy and Sell By, which many customers don't understand, in an effort meant to reduce food waste. In England, several supermarket companies this year abandoned various date labels on certain foods. William Morrison Supermarkets, based in Bradford, England, in January removed the use-by dates from 90% of its own brand milk, though the containers still carry a best-before date. Use-by is employed by many organizations to indicate the last date a product is safe to consume, while best before is an indicator of quality. Milk is still safe to consume even after a best before date, the retailer said, encouraging customers to smell the milk they have at home to see if it's still to be used. London-based Marks & Spencer's grocery business said it would remove date labels across 300 of its fruit and vegetable lines, expanding the practice from it's loose produce to items that come in packets, such as fresh grapes. Packaged produce sold without date labels will feature a code that store workers will use to decide when to take products off the shelf, the company says. Waltrose, the supermarket chain owned by John Lewis Partnerships, said it would remove best before dates from nearly 500 produce items starting in September. They hope customers use their judgment when assessing freshmen rather than throwing away produce purely because it's past its so-called best date. England requires food businesses to use terms best before or used by on most packaged food products. The United States has no federal law on date labels other than baby food, making a hodgepodge of state laws and guidance. But federal agencies, trade groups, and politicians are pushing for companies to stop using a range of labels with unclear meanings, from enjoy by to expire on. Instead, come up with common standards, said Emily Broad-Lieb, the founding director at the Harvard University Law School's Food Law and Policy Clinic. Some critics say getting rid of date labels could backfire. Labeling helps customers quickly scan for the freshest items on the shelf and easily keep track of the oldest and newest item in one's home refrigerator. Consumers without information about an item's freshness may be pushed to shop elsewhere. Consumers now, more than ever, need as much help as they can get from supermarkets, and this move seems to be withdrawing something from them, said Andrew Bushy, founder of the England-based firm Retail Reflections. Research published in 2016 by the Harvard University Law Food Law and Policy Clinic found that 84% of the consumers always or occasionally threw food when it reaches the date printed on the label. Only 67% knew that the best buy dates are indicators of a food's quality and freshness. 15% thought they were a food safety indicator, and 13% thought they were for the store staff. The U.S. Drug and Food and Drug Administration in 2019 in a letter urged the food industry to adopt a single standardized best if used by label on items that are safe to consume even when their taste or smell have deteriorated. The Consumer Goods Forum, a global trade group in 2017, similarly recommended that retailers and food producers go with a quality date on non-perishable items, such as best if used by, or expiration for perishable items, such as used by. The organization doesn't track members' companies' progress on such calls to action, according to their CEO. U.S. lawmakers have long sought to pass legislation to simplify and standardize date labeling. The latest, the Bipartisan Food Date Labeling Act, introduced last year by Representative Shelley Pingree of Maine, would mandate that food manufacturers label foods with either a quality-assuring best if used by or a safety-oriented used by date. There's a worry about Congress getting involved in labeling and it becoming a kind of slippery slope leading to requirements on other things as well, said Harvard's Ms. Lieb. But the number of companies paring back or clarifying their date labels on their own accord suggests a business case for doing so, she said. It is said that 40% of the food sold in the United States is thrown away, very likely much of it due to misreading date labels. A North Carolina bakery sells croissants and pies, and customers can't get enough of them. So much so that the Raleigh shop has been named the state's number one place to get these pastries. Bolted Bread received the top honor after restaurant review website Yelp studied comments that visitors had left over time. The website said it ranked spots using a number of factors, including the total volume and the rating reviews mentioning pastry and pastries. On Yelp, some raved about Bolted Bread's offerings, including cinnamon dust morning buns and croissants. They said were flaky and filled with butter. Several also fans of the pies, which were available to order ahead of Thanksgiving. Others praised the shop's namesake breads, ranging from baguettes to rye, helping it to earn more than 4 out of 5 stars on Yelp. We stone mill our flour every day using organic and heirloom grains, Bolted Bread said on its website. In-house milling gives us the freedom to explore the huge variety of wheat, rye, oats, and corn that aren't commercially available to industrial mills. Then the bakery mixes the ingredients by hand and lets the ovens do a lot of the work. Mostly we try to stay out of the way, the business wrote. The shop is located at 614 South Street, but previously had announced plans to move to nearby DuPont Circle. Since it started in 2014, the team behind the bakery also launched Benchwarmers Bagels and Bright Spot Donuts, both in Raleigh. It's not the first time a Raleigh shop has been recognized for its sweet. This year, Ekazoo was named North Carolina's best chocolate shop, and Baker's Dozen ranked among the nation's top place for donuts. In mid-November, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration indicated for the first time it had no safety concerns over a chicken product grown from cells in a lab setting. bringing cultivated meat closer to American grocery stores. The FDA said it had completed a pre-market review of a cultivated chicken product from Berkeley, California-based Upside Foods that had no unresolved questions. It's safe for humans to eat. The lab-grown chicken from Upside Foods must still get approval from the USDA, which oversees the meat industry, before it can be sold in the United States. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is committed to supporting innovation in the food supply. Commissioner Robert Califf and Susan Main, Director of the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. Today we're announcing we've completed our first pre-market consultation of a human food made from cultured animal cells. Proponents of the cultured meat industry who hope to overhaul a meat production system that relies on using much of the world's cropland to feed animals cheered the FDA actions. This is a critical milestone toward the future of food, said Bruce Friedrich, president of the Good Food Institute, a nonprofit think tank focused on expanding plant-based and cultivated meat. Cultivated meat will soon be available to consumers in the United States who desire their favorite foods to be made more sustainable, with production requiring a fraction of the water of conventional meat when produced at scale. Yuma Valetti, CEO of Upside Foods, said the FDA decision was the biggest moment in the history of our company, which was founded in 2015. People love meat and we want to preserve the choice, but do it in a more humane and efficient process, he said. Cultivated meat is often grown in a vat, copying stem cells extracted from a live animal or from the ovaries of a newly slaughtered animal. The vat is also filled with serum containing amino acids, sugars, and other nutrients needed for the cells to grow. Mr. Valetti said the cells are like a starter dough, and after being grown for about 3 weeks, are harvested and shaped into forms familiar to consumers like a chicken breast. Singapore is the only country so far to have approved the sale of cultivated meat products. Mr. Valetti said the FDA's announcement meant that the regulatory process would now largely shift to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which has historically regulated the meat industry. Under agreement between the two agencies, FDA will oversee cell production and the labeling of meat and other products made from cells. Upside Foods is working on a label designed to differentiate cultivated meat, the term the industry has agreed to use to inform consumers of the difference from traditional meat. The FDA called Upside's product cultured chicken cell material, but said it wasn't recommending that term for common use. The growing cultivated meat industry applauded the FDA's decision. The industry still faces hurdles in increasing production of lab-grown meat and making it competitive in price when compared to traditional meat. We will never know what science can come up with. We look forward to seeing these products being available. We've often shared with you the opinions expressed by B. Wilson, whose food column that appears in the Wall Street Journal under the title Table Talk. This story tells about how the U.S. became a turkey nation. She begins, "If you want to understand the sheer extent of the American relationship with turkey, consider the TV dinner. In 1952, Swanson was the largest turkey grower in the world and had a lot of unsold turkeys left over after Thanksgiving and Christmas to deal with. So they worked with some of the unmuttered poultry. They created the first turkey TV dinners, including cornbread stuffing and a sweet potato. Some doubted whether Americans would want to eat a roast turkey dinner all year round. But by the end of the first year on the market, 10 million of these new frozen dinners had been sold. This year's 2022 Thanksgiving will test how attracted Americans are to eating turkey. The turkey industry has been hard hit by the avian flu, which led to the culling of entire flocks. Around 80% of fresh whole turkey scales typically happen in November, but prices are nearly twice as high as last year, and certain sizes of birds are becoming scarce. Yes, something tells me it'll take more than that to discourage turkey from the Thanksgiving table. If I'm allowed to comment on this subject as a British person with American relatives. In 2020, around 46 million whole turkeys were consumed on Thanksgiving alone, and according to the National Turkey Federation, more than 90% of Americans consume turkey as a part of Thanksgiving dinner. Nothing in the American diet is grumbled about so much about, yet eaten so universally, as the Thanksgiving turkey. To the vast majority of Americans, a giant roast bird is a part of a holiday feast. As food writer J. Kenji Lopez has written, year after year we gather around the holiday table thinking about that turkey like we think about our family members. One of these things we just have to put up with before the wine and the pie kick in. Few dishes create as much cooking anxiety as a roast turkey. Since 1981, the Turkey Talk Line, run by Butterball, has been answering questions about how to prepare the bird. The lines are staffed with people trained to answer intricate questions on the virtues of spatch cooking, how to get the legs cooked through without drying the white meat, and whether it's worth brining the turkey before you roast it. But apparently the most popular question by a long way is simply, how do I defrost it? Sadly, if you wait to ask that question on Thursday morning, you're too late, because the answer is to put it in the fridge for a few days. Tradition is the main reason for the non-negotiable Thanksgiving turkey, though some of the facts and quotes you find on the internet about patriotic qualities of turkey are simply made up. For example, it's not true that Benjamin Franklin proposed the turkey would be the national bird of the United States instead of the bald eagle, although he did praise the turkey as a true original native of America. In fact, the average American today eats far more turkey than their ancestors ever did, and the turkey itself is an altogether different bird. Wild turkeys were definitely eaten by the first European colonists, but those were small, gamey fowls, quite unlike the average farm turkey. Native Americans roasted their delicious birds on spits, and the pilgrims in the Plymouth colony seemed to have eaten them as part of their second Thanksgiving dinner in 1623. But there were no dry turkey sandwiches or turkey meatball. In 1623, both were inventions of the post-war turkey industry designed to get people to eat more turkey year-round. Figures from the USDA suggest that American turkey consumption dipped a little in 2021 to 15.4 pounds per person, down from 16 pounds in 2019. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.